The stars are right, and that means it's time for another episode of The Whisper in Darkness. I'm your host, The Man from Lang. Thank you very much for joining me today. On this episode, we are reviewing the Survivor cards in Into the Maelstrom, the sixth Mythos pack in the Innsmouth Conspiracy Cycle. There are spoilers throughout if you care about that sort of thing. If you enjoy what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Before we get started, a quick reminder of how we rate cards here on The Whisper in Darkness. The best of the best get an Elder Sign, while the worst of the worst receive a Tentacle, and the cards in between receive a +1, +0, or Elder Thing, respectively. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the patrons of this channel for their tremendous support. The Arkham Horror LCG community is amazing, and these people have gone above and beyond to bring you content like these player card reviews. If you'd like to support the channel's goals and see your name on this list, head over to patreon.com, sign up for a tier of your choice, and claim your rewards. That would be awesome. Without further ado, let's get started. There are two Survivor cards in the pack, the first of which is Jacob Morrison, Coast Guard Captain. He is a 3-cost asset that costs 3 experience points. He has a wild skill icon, the Ally and Bless traits. Jacob Morrison does not ready during the upkeep phase. As a response, when you would fail a skill test, exhaust Jacob Morrison, you get +2 skill value for that test. And as a response, after a blessed token is revealed from the chaos bag during a skill test you are performing, ready Jacob Morrison. He has 2 health, 2 sanity, and takes up an ally slot. Now, Jacob's response is similar to that of Granny Orne 3 from the Stella Clark Investigator starter deck. And Granny Orne 3 is insanely powerful. And she only adds +1, so Jacob adding +2 is even better. It's pretty easy for Ashken Pete to ready Jacob, despite Jacob's inability to ready on his own. Ashken Pete can do that for him just by discarding a card. And survivors do have one of the best ways of adding blessed tokens to the bag and keep faith. And of course, 2 health and 2 sanity is not too shabby. So what do you think of Jacob, Nate?
Yeah, I think he's pretty solid. I was actually thinking about him and Father Mateo, because Mateo wants to play all that Bless tech too, and this is great in Father Mateo. And I mean, it's essentially lucky on a stick, which is awesome. And if you can, even if you only use this like once a turn, but you're able to reliably flip him over, this is very good, I think.
Yeah, it's very powerful. I mean, Granny does +1, and whenever I play her, I use her almost every single turn for one test or another, whether it's during the Mythos phase or during the investigation phase. So having the ability to use this guy, I think this guy's a little bit, you know, Jacob's a little bit harder to abuse, because you do the whole readying part is a bit trickier. Granny is always turned on. But I think she's limited to once per... Is she limited to once per turn?
I think she's exhaust when you use her, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So this... So, yeah, I mean... Very, very similar cards. Of course, the only way you can ready this guy is by using... I think there is a... Is it a guardian skill that can ready as well?
There is a guardian skill that lets you ready an ally. Inspiring Presence?
Yeah, I think that question might mark? Be it. So there are a couple of ways besides drawing blessed tokens, but I mean, you're gonna, if you're playing the Survivor Blessed deck and you've got Tempt Fate and Keep Faith and whatnot in there, you know, you're gonna get quite a bit of value out of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
How would you rate him?
I think he's pretty solid. I'm debating on a 0 or +1. Survivors just have so many good allies that, you know, you really have to build your deck to be able to use Jacob Morrison effectively. So, you know, he's not as like ubiquitous as maybe something like Peter Silvestri or even Jessica Hyde from the Dream Eater cycle. Or even Granny Orne level 3, who's probably one of the best survivor allies in the game currently. But, you know, I think Lucky on a Stick is still pretty good. So I think I'm going to give him a +1, because I do think he's pretty solid. You know, I Father Mateo players must be rejoicing over this card.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the survivor allies are so strong that... It's hard to decide whether he's a +1 or a 0. I think I'm actually gonna go with zero for Jacob, just because while the plus two is very nice, I think if you want less hassle, I think you can probably go with Granny Orn, and you get the plus one willpower and plus one intellect as well, and you still get the plus one on a skill test, which is pretty good. And she's got three sanity, so she's still pretty decent for soak. And you, I guess it depends on how much you're willing to sort of build around Jacob to mitigate that the whole readying issue.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely building around Jacob when you put him in your deck, but I think when you do build around him, he's going to be very good for you. Going back to like Father Mateo or an investigator, maybe even like Yorick, who also likes to dabble in the blessed tokens. This could be pretty good. Ashcan Pete, like we were saying earlier, also really likes this card because he gets around that issue entirely. And also has access to other blessed cards due to his Dunwich deck building options. So, yeah, I think there are certainly decks that could mess around with him, and I don't think you'd be disappointed having him in your deck. And those occasional turns where you trigger him and you pass a test, and then you have the covenant, the Ancient Covenant in play, and you ready him, and then you activate him again. Those turns are going to feel amazing. Whereas Granny Orn doesn't have that kind of potential ceiling to her. So, it depends.
I think it's, I'm gonna stay at zero, but I think it's more the strength of the other survivor allies. And I mean, he could be a plus one as well. Like, it's hard for me to settle on where he would sit, because I'm just thinking, we haven't even discussed Madame LaBranche in the Dark Horse decks. There are just so many good allies that can slot in, that I think, I mean, he does offer plus two on any skill test, but I've been playing a lot of the survivor decks I've been playing lately tend to lean heavily into the evasion. So somebody like Peter Sylvester is a much better choice, because you've got the track between the track shoes and him, you can easily boost your agility to five or six. And then, agility's nice, because it seems like most enemies are not really do not have very high evade values. So even if the chaos bag isn't playing ball with you, you generally have enough to pass those skill tests. So I would lean towards those allies before I would lean on Jacob. But I'm sure there are survivors out there, and you mentioned Father Mateo a couple times, that would just value having the plus two skill value more than the extra skill boosts. The second survivor card in the pack was created by the Morai at Arkham Knights 2019. This is Shrine of the Moiré.
Don't
It
ask
is
me, man. I
a
don't know.
one cost event that costs 3 experience points. It has a willpower, intellect, and agility skill icon, the fortune, blessed, and curse traits. It attaches to your location, uses three offerings. Attached location gains the free triggered ability, draw the top card of the encounter deck, exhaust Shrine of the Morai, and spend one offering, return up to two cards with a total combined level of five or less from your discard pile to your hand. Man, it's a good thing this costs 3 experience points, so Min can stick this on her barricaded location and just go to town.
Ooh. Yeah, that would be gross.
What do you think
But
about this one?
so if you're combining this with cards like Signum Crucis and a Watchful Peace, this gets horrendously degenerate very quickly. Because you're basically drawing one encounter card in place of four every turn, which is insane. I like that this card can you can place it on a location and then other investigators can come and use it. That's pretty interesting. This type of recursion, though, it's tough. It's very low opportunity cost for very high benefit. And I don't know if I'd like that so much.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Anytime I see cards with the attached to your location text on it, I start to wonder. I don't know. I mean, survivors have so many ways of recurring cards that are easier than this. You know, Resourceful gets them cards, York can get cards, Scrounge for Supplies gets you cards, back if necessary. It is worth noting that this is one of the few cards that enables non-survivors to return cards from their discard pile to their hand. So if you are playing in multiplayer, then this I think becomes a lot more interesting. I don't think the solo player in me looks at this card and is all that excited about it, because generally in solo I'm moving fast and I don't want to spend time at locations trying to, like, I can't imagine spending 3 turns at a location to get all of the to use the this ability 3 times. I just don't see that happening very often. Plus the action it takes you to get it on the table in the first place. So I don't see myself playing it in solo, but I think if you're in multiplayer and there's a certain, you know, there are certain scenarios where if you drop this on the right location, you could get, you know, the table could get quite a bit of value from it. It might be worthwhile.
If you were able to play this in like Untamed Wilds or Doom of Etzli, where you have that like initial location that you're exploring from, you drop this down turn one, everyone draws an encounter card or like uses a bunch of cards, and then maybe late game you draw this on like the Chamber of Time, you quickly stock up for your run back into the entrance, and then you book it. So it could be useful in situations like that, but I mostly see this card as just a combo piece where you're attaching this, you know, you're using your survivor's turn to essentially stock up on the cards you need to perform your combo again. And, you know, like when you're combining this with the ability to get like rogue combo cards or seeker combo cards, then that's kind of where this card I think treads pretty dangerous water.
Or a watchful piece.
Yeah, or like I was saying, like you can get a Watchful Piece and Signum Crucis, and then you can just fail a skill test, add a bunch of bless tokens, and then use those bless tokens to skip the Mythos phase. So I do think that you're absolutely right in that in solo, this is not the most appealing card because, like you said, you're moving from a location to location so quickly that you don't have time to sit around at a location for 3 turns or even like hop to and from a location 3 times, you know, unless there's like a very central location that you're kind of constantly traveling in and out of. But those tend to be early campaign scenarios, so you don't have experience to even buy this card with. But I don't particularly like this card just because it feels directly like it facilitates those sort of kind of like against the spirit of the game combos, and I just don't really like that so much. Yeah, the other recursion cards in Survivor have some sort of restriction to them, like you were saying. Like Resourceful requires you to pass a test, York requires you to draw an Elder Sign or, you know, loop Yuke Catastrophe. Even Scrounge for Supplies has its limitations because it costs you an action and it can only get level 0 cards, whereas this gets literally any card. It treads dangerous water that
So do
I
you
don't
think
think
it's
benefits the
worthwhile just
game.
playing this for one card? Say two cards. So you don't stay around. Do you
Do it
think it
like
would
just
be
using it once?
just using it once?
No, I don't think it's worth using once just because you have to have cards in your graveyard to be able to recur in the first place. Like, I don't think it's bad if you do that, but it's a little slow. You're essentially drawing an encounter card and using an action to draw two from your discard pile, which is decent, but I think this card's fullest potential is when you're kind of, you know, you're looping things over and over again to kind of break the game.
So how would you rate this one?
I think in multiplayer, it's probably a +1. You know, if your whole table is kind of building around using this card to loop things, but in solo, this is probably a 0 or even an Elder thing just because it's so slow. So I think I'll give it a 0 overall.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know what to make of this card. because it just it you know, I as a predominantly solo player, I don't see myself purchasing this even in Survivor. It doesn't really solve any problems that I'm having as when I play Survivors, so I'm pretty happy with what Resourceful gets me, and between Resourceful and Scrounge for Supplies, I'm pretty happy with, even if I'm playing not Yorick, I'm pretty happy with how they do. So this card doesn't seem very necessary, but and I don't play enough, I don't think I play enough multiplayer to be like, hey, let's abuse the living hell out of this shrine by st like I keep thinking about like playing the Midnight Masks and dropping this like right in that central location and where everybody's going to go through it several times per game, so you can, it's like, hey everybody, here's your spot if you need to, if you're doing some sort of combo play, this will get you what you need back. Although again, you know, that I don't know, even in thinking about the Midnight Masks, like drawing extra encounter, I don't know if I'd how keen I would be to draw extra encounter cards in that particular scenario, just because many of the cards in that can add doom very quickly, and you could suddenly see yourself like have a very manageable game suddenly spiral out of control just by getting the wrong encounter card. So yeah, this is a really tough card for me to judge. It's not a card I gravitate toward, but I mean, it is the only one of the very few cards in the game that lets you get non-survivor cards back into your hand. So there's probably something there that in the vast card pool that is now available that you can where this could come in handy.
Yeah, and that's what worries me is that, a card like this only gets better with time. The more cards that we see, the more cards that interact with each other and can kind of create combos, that this card becomes better because it just allows you to keep doing those combos over and over again. So
That's going to do it for the Survivor cards in Into the Maelstrom. We have Jacob Morrison, very solid ally, in a very competitive in a very competitive group of allies in the Survivor card pool. He is another strong one. His ability is quite good, and there are ways to work around his readying limitation. Shrine of the Moray, well, that's, man, I mean, it fits in with the Survivor recursion mechanics that they have, but this sort of makes it available to in multiplayer at least to other classes as well. So who knows what that can what sort of magic players can make with it in that setting. It's not a card I think that I would use in solo, but I don't know. Who knows? Maybe there'll be broken decks come out of it. So what are your thoughts on this pack as a whole, Nate? It is the final pack in the cycle. We sort of expect the best of the best in these packs, and there are quite a few very solid cards in this pack.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The 25 automatic, the Holy Spear, and Justify the Means are really the kind of standout cards to me in this pack.
Besides the Seeker cards.
Yeah, well, I'm not even gonna go there, but those cards are ridiculously powerful. Yeah, I mean, it's a very solid pack. If you're just picking this pack up for player cards, you're not gonna be disappointed. Like, the Seeker cards are phenomenal. I think the permanent card is especially probably a little too good in most cases, just because it's just free card draw with no cost to it really. It doesn't even draw you weaknesses, so that's a little silly. Ariadne's Twine, is a linchpin for the Secrets deck. The Guardians made out well, the Seekers made out well, the Rogues made out well. The Survivors got some interesting choices, and then the Mystics, blah.
Poor Mystics. Yeah, as someone
Yeah.
who plays a lot of Mystic, it's been a rough cycle. I'm not too sure what I mean, as you and I were talking before the episode a little bit about, maybe if they had focused on the manipulating Doom aspect instead of, we did get a couple of cards in the one pack, Abyssal Tome, that was about manipulating Doom, which I think is an unexplored territory for the Mystics. I think there's still quite a bit of design space that they could look at there, and I think sort of given the themes of the campaign as a whole about this sort of astral conjunction, or at least that's what it seems to me anyway, that would be averting that sort of doom would be an interesting area to explore. But I think the Mystics as a whole just sort of got the shaft this time, which is, who knows, maybe next cycle. Apparently we're going to be cold next cycle.
I wonder what that could mean.
So Arctic, which would be Wendigo probably, or Antarctic, which would be, I don't know,
Mountains of
there isn't a big
Madness?
bad in
Big Mountains of Madness?
the Mountains of Madness. Yeah, there isn't really a big bad in that, I guess, except for the Shoggoth
And the Elder Things.
and the Elder Things. Yeah, we haven't really had much to do with Elder Things. That would be I'd sort of prefer to look at the Elder Things than Wendigo, but I don't know. I've never been a big Wendigo fan anyway, so.
Yeah, I would actually like to see a campaign that does Mountains of Madness and doesn't have a boss at the end of it. Just because every other campaign has had one, if not two, kind of final boss mythos creatures, and for me, that kind of deflates their importance and significance a little bit. Because they're supposed to be beings that are beyond comprehension or, beyond the scope of humanity. And when you're shooting out Buck Notcha with a gun, for me, it kind of takes me out of it a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
If they do explore the Arctic or like the northern, I guess northern Canada, I know there was that fan-made scenario that deals with that quite a bit. But maybe it'd be good if they, from a diversity standpoint, they could certainly explore Native American culture quite a bit more. And I think that would be an interesting aspect to explore if it was done well.
Yeah, that would be cool. I would like to see that as well. We had mentioned in our Discord channel, Vase and I were talking about a potential like Northern Japan or like Mongolian campaign where that could be, set in the winter as well, and that could be kind of neat if that was handled well, but I guess only time will tell.
That's right. Well, we will probably be back with a review of the player cards in Return to the Circle Undone. That is the only product on the docket that we know of, and everybody's sort of sitting around waiting for some news, and apparently that news is coming, but not this month, maybe next month. So we'll wait and see what designer MJ Newman and her team have in store for us. Until then, we have stuff going up on the Whisper in Darkness. We have stuff. We'll be recording a new episode for the Great Old Ones Gaming podcast here very shortly. You're busy streaming, Nate, on Great Old Ones Gaming fairly frequently, as is Vase. So there's still lots of content out there to explore if you're a fan of the Arkham Horror LCG. That's going to do it for this episode. If you enjoyed what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. If you need to contact me, I can be reached at manfromlang@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at manfromlang. Until the stars are right, keep your shotgun close and your other sign closer. Take care out there, and happy investigating.